Talk Cheese.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor William Fink, and our ongoing series on the book of Ezekiel here on Christogenos. And last week, we covered primarily chapter 37, which was the dead men's bones and the two sticks prophecy. And we did a little bit of chapter 38. So I think we're just going to start over from chapter 38. But a little bit of recap, I just want to say that as far as the two sticks prophecy is concerned, let me just quote here verse 26. This is chapter 37, verse 26. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. This is talking about the house of Judah and the house of Israel. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them. There's no way that this covenant can ever be absolved or changed.
Or there's no way that it could ever include the Edomite Jews.
That's right.
So Judah and Israel have to be two different parties, right?
Right.
Judah and the Jews have to be two different parties.
Because the Jews have never accepted any covenant. They never accepted the law being written in their hearts, right?
Well, this covenant has to be the new covenant that was also prophesied by Jeremiah.
By Jeremiah, exactly. So covenant theology is absolutely the core of it's the connection between the Old Testament and the New Testament. If you don't study the covenants, you have really no idea what the Bible is about. So I just wanted to specify that verse, and I know you had a little bit of a recap too, Bill.
Well, yeah, probably longer than you think. I don't
okay.
know. Well, first let me say that from Ezekiel 33:21, which is the 12th year of captivity, the fall of Jerusalem, all the way up through 39, Ezekiel is writing one basic prophecy here. It's all connected.
Okay.
There's no other break in it to tell us that something, you know, that it's another date and time. As he starts off all of this, the various sections of his prophecy. The next break is Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 1, and the 25th year of the captivity. The temple vision was given 13 years after this. Okay? Well, which is a long time, right? A long break. Now, as I hypothesized last week, these chapters of Ezekiel from 34 through 39, that they should be understood as a unit, I believe, and they correlate to similar prophecies, such as, in Revelations 12 and Revelations 20, and I'll point that out as we proceed. And we're going to have a lot of notes from Revelation in these next two chapters.
There's a lot of prophecies with Jeremiah in Ezekiel.
Right.
But they're interspersed here and there. You know, you have to you have to read carefully to find them. Yeah, like verse 37:26 is one of them. Yes.
Now Ezekiel chapter 34 talks about the lost sheep, which the emigrated and deported Israelites. In 35 and 36, we see a clear prophecy that Esau was taking over the lands which formerly belonged to Israel. And I think that that's only representative of Esau taking over and claiming Israel's entire heritage all through time. Because these prophecies are, I believe these prophecies don't cover any particular, but like the time then and the time of the last day, that they apply to the entire history of our race in the deportations from Israel.
Well, here, let me just say that in the Old Testament times, before the intertestamental period, it's obvious that the Edomites were always trying to finagle a way to become advisors to the kings of the house of Judah, okay? And in many cases there were, such as Doeg, you know, became the advisor and the murderer for Solomon, right? And but they had to be, since they were so familiar with the people of Israel and the holy scriptures, they had to be plotting their eventual takeover of Israel, which the Babylonian captivity provided their first opportunity, and then the Herodians provided their major opportunity, where they did in fact totally take over the house of Judah, and then the subsequent history. Okay. So they had already established a track record of impersonating Israel way back when. Now they've been doing it for the last 2,000 years.
Well, right. Now, and this whole thing represents a process.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I'm trying to point out. That now with the Valley of Dry Bones in Ezekiel 37, it talks about an eventual awakening or a coming to light, so to speak.
Yes.
Of the true people of Yahweh, as opposed to those Edomite imposters that Ezekiel had just spoken of.
Yes.
Now, basically, that awakening, you know, first deported Israel received the gospel. And that process took 1,000 years. And then a few hundred years after the last of the Germanic tribes was converted to Christianity, men began to read the Bible, right? To actually study the scripture.
Right.
And break away from an oppressive church. And for the Reformation to happen, that process, that took another 300 years. That didn't happen in a day.
Right.
So now, after the Reformation, and another lapse of perhaps 200 years, we began the science of archaeology, and we learned the identity message. And even though some of us are way ahead of most of us in the identity message, still, and discovering who the true Israelites of Scripture are, Well, the same was true in the Reformation, where some of us where you had Jan Hus and the first English Bible translators in the 1300s, and Martin Luther didn't really make the work that made the Reformation final until the 1500s.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way it is. This is all a very slow process,
right,
that I think that we're, of course, going through, but we're approaching the tail end of. I pray.
Oh, yeah.
That now, as I pointed out, Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39, that they describe a true Israel, awakened Israel, surrounded by all of her enemies.
Right.
And as I pointed out from Micah chapter 4 and elsewhere last week, America is that true Israel. But as we mentioned, that doesn't it's evident in other prophecies that does not discount our fellow Saxon, Celtic, Germanic nations,
yeah,
right? Just because this is the land of taken out of many nations, we gathered Israel.
Right.
Now, it was also said that I don't believe that these prophecies are limited to any particular narrow period of time. They're certainly not limited to some near future 7-year period of tribulation.
Right.
And we've certainly been in this period of tribulation for several 100 years now. The lost sheep did not wander over every mountain in a day or even in Ezekiel's own time. Rather, I believe that indicates the 1,000-plus years of migrations of the Israelite people to the lands that they are now historically associated with, primarily Northern Europe and North America.
Right.
Just like that, likewise, the Edomite takeover of the Israelite heritage, that took 500 years. It began 2,600 years ago, but it wasn't complete until the close to the first century B.C. And Herod didn't actually attain the kingdom and kill off the last of the real kings of Judah until the 36 B.C.
Right.
So that process took 500 years. All of this is describing a process, and it's very long-term prophecies. And as we move into Ezekiel 38 and 39, we'll see, and the Adamic names are used to describe these people, but that's because that's where that these people all live in places and mix with other races where the Adamic nations originally started out. And some of them are indeed descended from those original Adamic nations, but we see that all of the Adamic world is our enemy now, and they're all race mixed, and that's very plain. That's very plain in history.
Yeah, and even if they're not race mixed, they've been politically, America has been demonized and blamed for all the evils of colonialism, okay, modern colonialism. And, of course, that's a false charge. It's the Jews who are the bankers who are really to blame for all of that, you know, but the people don't see it. Okay, anything else before we get it back into chapter 38?
Well, no, I won't go into the Gog. You know, we went into that at great length last week. I had a couple of more notes on it.
Okay.
There's some people that that say that Haman, the Agagite character in the book of Esther, shows that there is somehow a historic God among the so-called Gog,
yeah.
among the so-called Gentiles. And I don't accept that. And there's absolutely no corroboration for a people named Agagites
okay.
outside of the book of Esther.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Okay.
So I really don't accept that evidence as the Persians being Gog, as some people would claim. And the Persians are part of Gog, that there's no doubt, from Elam here, that, you know, mentioned among the enemies
yeah.
of Israel. They're a part of that, but that doesn't mean that they're exclusively that, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, in the Arabian tradition, many, many Muslims / Arabian, because they're not always Muslims, the Arabian tradition, the Arabian authors of the Middle Ages have identified Gog and Magog with the Khazars, okay? Which is what we basically did when we were talking about them, okay?
Well, right, but that's because they fit all the prophecies.
Right.
But what I'm trying to say is that Gog is a general name for this mass of mixed-race people,
okay.
among whom are the Edomite, Canaanite Jews.
Yeah, and they're the leaders. They're the leaders of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
That, well, you know, and I'm going to quote a little later on, Isaiah, where it says that I will slay Leviathan, who is in the sea. That's not talking about a whale or a sea monster. Leviathan is the Kenite Jew, and he's mixed in with the sea of peoples. The sea is the sea of people.
Yes. Leviathan. I wonder, you know, there's the Levi. That they're obviously pretend Levitical priests.
well, yeah, that might be a quaint quaint. Well, a little
there might be a play
there.
On words there worth investigating. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, let me just start with verse 1 of chapter 38. We covered the first 7, but let's start with verse 1 again for this show. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him. And of course, this is repeated in Revelation 28, so there's a stark correlation. We're talking about the end times here.
Right, definitely. And I'm going to quote from Revelation 20 a little later.
Okay.
But last week we had demonstrated that chief prince, actually in the Septuagint and in the NAS, is translated, that word translated chief here is read as a common proper name, Ross. The prince of Meshech and Tobel, and that could be understood as being the Rus, the Germanic tribe of the Rus,
uh-huh.
and Meshech is the people of Moscow today, and
yeah.
Tobel are the people of Tobolsk, and they're two of the leading cities in Russia.
Yes, yes. Okay, verse 3, and say, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, Behold, I am against you, O God, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. Of course, in the last 70 years, actually, well, for a 70-year period, it was run by the Bolsheviks, which are, of course, the Ashkenazi Khazars, right? Verse 4, And I will turn you back and put hooks into your jaws, and I will bring you forth and all your army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer and all his bands, the house of Dagarma of the north quarters, and all his bands, and many people with you, be you prepared, and prepare for yourself, you and all your company that are assembled to you, and be you a guard to them. So it sounds like we're talking about a huge amassing of armies for a final conflict between these armies of Gog and Magog versus true Israel.
Well, right, but I believe that a lot of these armies have already been here.
Okay.
We've had the Ashkenazi Jews who have descended from a lot of these people. And we also have the Arab world, the entire Arab world, the Iraqis, the Iranians, and the Turks have descended from these people in part,
uh-huh.
who all mixed with other races, the Mongols, the Arabs during the Muslim conquest of the 6th and 7th and 8th centuries, and that the Egyptians and the Negro slave trade. All of these people in Mesopotamia and the Near East have interbred together with the advent of Islam in the 6th century, 7th century A.D. I believe that these Adamic family names are used to identify these people so that we would know who they are and where they're coming from. And we, when we look at the Ashkenazi Jew and the Khazars, those tribes that were converted to Judaism by the Edomites also came from these lands, the ancient lands of Magog and Elam and the Iraqis and the Caspian and Black Sea region. They just came from them in much more modern times than the ancient Scythians who had passed through that area when it was still predominantly white.
Yes. I think we could also see that this final conflict, we're talking about the Battle of Armageddon here, is being the first stages of it are more of an influx of immigration. It's an immigration war with Arab Muslims and blacks and Turks and what have you.
Well, right. We've had all that, and we've been under siege now.
Yes.
For about 100 years
it's
already.
It's a siege. It's an immigration siege. When the enemy shall come in as a flood, as the book of Revelation puts it, right?
The Jews came out, right, and we're going to see that here. The Jews came here in large numbers in the 1880s.
Yes.
And that they were here before that. They were here from when the Dutch were here in the early 1600s.
Yes.
However, that they were very small in number, that they were, for the most part, kept separate from the general society.
Yes.
And they had no real political voice, that those Sephardic Dutch Jews, except that they did have money and influence
right
from the beginning. But they had no real political voice, and they had no sway over our Christian churches here, not until they came out with the Scofield and Bullinger Bibles and bought their way into and purchased Judeo-Christianity for themselves in the late 1800s.
Yeah, buying influence in the seminaries, then very lately the televangelists, major coup.
Right, and they always had some semblance of persuasion over Christianity because Christian translators had always turned to them for an understanding of Hebrew and certain other things. However, they never really had a poisonous influence in our Protestant churches until they were able to buy their way in the late 1800s.
Right. Yeah.
Now, that's from everything that I've seen.
Yeah.
But when the Jews came into this country in large numbers in the 1880s and 1890s, they started pressuring, political pressure and deceit and all of the perfidy that they pull off in every nation, that they attempt in every nation, buying politicians, buying judges, tricking politicians. And by the time of Woodrow Wilson, our political process was already very corrupt, and we had women's rights, equal rights, women's suffrage, and we started, the country started being flooded with people from Eastern and Southern Europe who were also, for the most part, of the same Turkish, Arab, Khazar Jewish blood.
Uh-huh.
Even though they didn't identify themselves as Jews or as Muslims, a lot of them identified themselves as Catholics. And they flooded this country with these spurious people, and it changed the balance of political power in the country, and it slanted the entire nation to the left.
That's right.
Sharply to the left.
Very, very much so. Yes.
And that's the beginning of this last Battle of Armageddon. And today, look at us.
Yeah.
We've been on a downward slide ever since the Woodrow Wilson administration. And during that administration, they also gained total control over our economy through the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. Well, I forget the name of the Chinese general who wrote the book on war. And the first part of any war is deception, okay? Preparing the enemy and softening them up, for the kill. And that's what's been happening to America for the last 100 years. The international Jew has been softening America up for the kill, and it's really turning violent. with the immigrants totally taking advantage of the white Christians who simply do not understand what's happening and are actually underwriting their own destruction that's being promoted by the international Jew. They just don't get it. Simply don't get it. But here, let's continue with verse.
I'd like to quote. You've read verse 7, right? I'd like to quote two little passages in Revelation in correlation to Ezekiel 38 and 39 at this point.
Okay.
And the first one's Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 through 10. And when 1,000 years are expired, and that 1,000-year period, was the first restoration in my translation.
Okay.
And there's nothing in the original texts about the resurrection of the dead.
Okay.
In Revelation chapter 20. Nothing.
Okay.
Okay. That was a that was a 9th or 10th century interpolation to Revelation.
Uh-huh.
Now when 1,000 years are expired, Satan, or the adversary, shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out and deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle,
uh-huh.
the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breast of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them.
Right.
Now, this is very much like this chapter in Revelation 38, and even where the fire devours the enemies, we'll see that here in Ezekiel 38.
Right.
Now, I'm sorry, Ezekiel 38. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented night and day forever. When Gog and Magog are destroyed once, they're destroyed forever. They're not coming back
right.
1,000 years later.
Yes.
This 1,000 years is in our past. That was the 1,000 years that the Jews, the enemies of Christ, were excoriated from our society, totally.
Yes.
Well, now Revelation 12 is also comparable to Ezekiel 38. It talks about the same thing. It's just another vision of basically the same events which are going to come upon us.
Uh-huh. Okay.
From a slightly different perspective. And I'll read from verses 13 to 18. And when the dragon saw that he had been cast down into the earth. This is a prophecy with several different meanings, and they can all be explained where they make perfect sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But this meaning that this interpretation I'm about to employ here is the Jews, when they lost all political power in the Byzantine and Roman empires and in Europe. They lost all political power with Theodosius. What with Theodosius II, in a process that started with Constantine and worked its way through a couple of other emperors that slowly excoriated the Jews from society
uh-huh.
when Christianity took its hold on Europe, right?
Right.
And became
right.
went from being an outlaw religion because of the Jews to being an accepted religion and then the official religion,
yeah,
right?
Outlawing
and that process also took 200. Yeah. It took about 100 years that process
right.
from Constantine.
It turned the table on the Jews too by outlawing Judaism, okay, and outlawing money lending, okay, which the Jews were proficient at.
Well, that's what really excoriated the Jews from society.
Right.
That's what cast them out because they could no longer function.
Right.
They couldn't own Christian slaves. They couldn't loan money at interest. They were basically screwed. They couldn't operate. They couldn't have a business.
Yeah, and they don't
because
charge
that,
right.
They thrive on money lending and everything associated with it.
Exactly.
And in a Christian society, that just when Christians obey their Bibles, there is no Jew because he can't make a living.
That's right.
They leave. The porno industry is gone. The banking industry is gone. The credit cards are gone. All we have to do is practice Christianity. You want to get rid of the Jews.
That's right. That's right.
All right. When the dragon saw that he had been cast down into the earth, he persecuted the woman who had given birth to the man-child. And they had given to the woman two wings of a great eagle in order that she may fly into the desert into her place where she is nourished or fed the gospel.
Right.
She is nourished there for a time, times, and half of a time from the face of the serpent, the Jew is excoriated from society, from European society, for the most part, as the various Israelite nations of dispersion were converted to Christianity.
Uh-huh.
And that, I believe, that 1,260 years is, again, the age of Catholic or Roman Catholic supremacy in Europe from just in the end of the French Revolution.
Yeah, well, as you said earlier, this whole thing is a process leading up to the final judgment day, okay? And it's part of the process that the Anglo-Saxon Israelite nations of Europe, which were Christian nations, okay, they came about as Christian nations, whether they were founded as Christian nations, but they became Christian nations, and they parted company with the Jews during that whole period of time. They had no social intercourse with Jews. Very little.
Absolutely. Even when kings like Charlemagne, right? Charlemagne used the Jews for what he thought was his own good. He was really screwing us all in the long run. Well, even when he used the Jews for his own ends, they were still, for the most part, totally separated from society.
Right.
From Christian society. They were forced to live in certain neighborhoods and be separate.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and as we discussed last time, they always finagled their way into the courts of the kings, either as physicians, moneylenders, advisors, what have you, you know. But that was the extent of it. They really did not have the influence on Christian society that they did after the Rothschilds.
Right. Now today what the end result is we have pornography everywhere, gambling in every state. Just about. Money lending usury is defined as more than 30% interest, which is
right.
Absolutely incredible,
right.
at least in New Jersey. And we have an environment that befits the Jews very well.
Yeah, Satan has indeed been let loose for a little season, as the book of Revelation clearly tells us, right?
Well, absolutely. And the end of this passage in Revelation 12, and the serpent had cast from his mouth water as a river after the woman. That's all of the invasions by the other races into Christendom in order to, and even to this very day, in order that he may have her carried off by the river of the other races.
Right.
And the earth assisted the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and gulped down the river which the dragon had cast from his mouth. However Yahweh effects that is still to be known, right? But
right.
But that's basically what's going to happen. And that, too, is here. We'll see that here in Ezekiel. And the dragon was angry.
And the huge gaps in the earth into which these people fall, right?
Well, right.
That'd be the literal interpretation.
And the dragon was angered by the woman and went to make war with those remaining of her offspring who keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahweh.
Right. Right,
and that's exactly what's been going on. As we'll see it here in Ezekiel 38, that they can't make war against us anymore. So they've taken to just beating us politically and walking in and taking over anyway. And that's exactly what all this immigration is all about. They've beaten us politically. They beat us politically with the social upheavals in this country. Finally, in the 1950s and 60s. And then they pass their immigration act, and the other races just walk right in and take over, and the Jews happy.
Yes, yes. Okay, all right. Well, here, verse 8, and this is profound stuff, folks. These next few verses we're going to have to pay some attention to. Verse 8, after many days you shall be visited. In the latter years you shall come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people. Let me just stop right there. Brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people. What do you think this is talking about?
Well, we haven't had a war on our soil since the Civil War.
That's right.
And I hate to call it that, right? But everybody recognizes
it. War between
the
states, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Since that time, and since that, even though then we were really a nation gathered out of many people, we had Irishmen, Scots, English, Germans, Austrians, we had Scandinavians here in large numbers, the French were here in large numbers. Just about every nation in Northwest Europe had a very large representation here at that time, but even more today, every white nation in Europe has a large population here.
Right. and the next verse, against the mountains of Israel, which means that this nation brought back from the sword is a regathered Israelite nation. Right?
Well, absolutely.
It's talking about America, folks.
And this is definitely an end time prophecy,
right,
in the latter years, after many days shall. Now, that language is irrefutable.
Yeah, and the land which has always been waste, of course, before the white man came here to America, it was a wasteland. It was a wilderness. But it is brought forth out of the nations, and they shall dwell safely, all of them. Well, I would say for the first, excluding the Civil War, America has been the safest nation on the planet. So the only real attack has been 9/11, right, from outside.
Well, right. I mean, comparatively, we've had our crime, but nothing like most nations have suffered.
Yeah, well, certainly not invaders. We haven't had any invaders, you know, not military invaders. And in terms of dwelling in safety, you cannot compare. You cannot say that about the Israel. You cannot say that about the Israeli state. Those people don't live in safety. They never have, not from day one. So we can't be talking about the Israeli state in verse 8 here.
No, those people live in an entirely militarized environment,
right,
with walls around every town and village and giant fences separating large portions of the country. They're always in fear of suicide bombers.
That's right.
They're always in fear. And it's usually their own Mossad that's doing it to them.
Exactly.
They're sacrificing their
own people to blame it on Arabs, right?
Well, right, to keep it going,
exactly.
To keep the tension going.
Yes.
But they're always in fear, those people, of
that's right.
And it's every day somebody's getting killed over there. Probably.
So this verse cannot be talking about the Israeli state because it is not a place where people dwell in safety. It can only be America, folks. Verse 9. You shall ascend and come like a storm. You shall be like a cloud to cover the land, you and all your bands and many people with you. Now, of course, we have been talking about the immigration invasion.
Well, right. This is Israel flooded with aliens,
as right.
Jeremiah 31:27-29 also describes.
Yes.
That Yahweh would sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast. This is the way Israel puts it here.
Right.
Ezekiel puts it here.
Yes. But this is only with the immigration invasion is only the first phase. There's going to be a literal military invasion, in my opinion.
Well, that can't be discounted, and I'm planning on discussing that towards the end of the chapter.
Okay.
But that can't be discounted. It absolutely can't be.
Okay, verse 10. Thus says Yahweh, it shall also come to pass that at the same time shall things come into your mind, and you shall think an evil thought. Now, of course, there are many evil thoughts that come into the mind of the international Jew, right?
Well, my idea here when I read this was the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965.
Okay.
Which basically stopped all white immigration into this country.
Yes. Yes.
For the most part. And it preferred all the brown people of the world to admitted them, whoever wants to come practically.
Right. And
in fact, often we take them against their will and bring them here and stick them in our country.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That forbade European immigration into America.
Right. And the continuation of all of this world economy, free trade, disenfranchising the white people of America, exporting our jobs overseas, and then importing illegal aliens into our country, that's all part of the evil thought. But I think ultimately this, again, a military invasion that, I look at it this way. If, for example, if the international Jew invades Iran, you know, we're hearing all this saber-rattling noise at the present time about invading Iran. If that happens, America is going to get the blame. So, you know, and America is already hated around the world by various nations, by various political groups. And we're being blamed for what the international Jew is doing. So this
well, the lies in our media.
Yes.
We buy all the lies of our media. I found a video somebody pointed me to the other day. that's Ahmadinejad visiting a group of rabbis in New York.
Okay.
Now this is the evil Hitler-like Holocaust denier, right?
Yes.
That's how he's portrayed in our media.
That's right.
There's a video right now on the front page of ChristoGenia.org. Ahmadinejad with some of my comments, a friend of the Jews. These rabbis are worshiping this man.
Right.
That these rabbis, that they're making obeisance to him. They're talking about what a great and strong leader he is. That they're awarding him with this big silver or gold cup or whatever it is as some sort of gift, like a trophy.
Right.
And he's having a grand old time hugging and mugging it up with all of these rabbis, these Orthodox rabbis, right in New York City.
Right. Right.
Well, it shows, you know, this guy's supposed to be the evil Holocaust denier that the Jews can't even stomach to think of, and he's like Hitler, and he's a beast, and he's this, and he's everything the mainstream media calls him, and he's mugging it up with these Orthodox rabbis.
Right.
That they don't think too badly of his Holocaust denial.
Yeah, well, obviously, you're talking about the Netzarai Karta rabbis who are supposedly anti-Zionist, but...
absolutely, but it still shows the perfidy of the media
to
imagine that we're all to think of this guy as an evil beast, and really I do, but that's besides the point.
Yeah.
But these rabbis can be very comfortable with him and even honor the guy.
Yes, right. Well, it's interesting because I really think this is a reference to 9/11 and similar types of false flag, international false flag staged by the Jews. That's what this evil thought really means, okay? And it has deceived the entire world, except for a few people, you know, who said, "Now wait a minute, it wasn't Arabs with box cutters that brought those buildings down. It was high energy explosives." Okay, the evil thought is the international intrigue, including these false flags that the international Jew has been staging in these end times. Okay, and it will ultimately lead to World War III. There's no doubt in my mind that this is going to lead to World War III because their economy, which is based on fiat money, is collapsing. There's nothing they can do to stop it from collapsing, so they only have one choice, and that is more war. Okay? And that thought is more war.
How could we expect to have any peace here? What we basically have going on is that the Jew is having us hate all of the non-Jewish people in the Middle East.
Exactly.
At the same time that we are bringing them here in record numbers. Now, here we have a larger Jewish population than we have over there.
That's right.
And we're to hate them over there for the sake of the Jews over there and love them here.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense. I don't believe that the average person, even the average CNN watcher can't see the dichotomy there.
Right.
Can't see
cognitive
dissonance.
Yeah, it's only a question of time before the Muslims who have been imported here into America by the international Jew are going to engage in terrorist acts such as prying up railroad tracks, blowing up oil rigs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, they're more dangerous in our courtrooms and in our cities, the way that liberalism has run away with our society.
Right. Yeah.
And pretty soon we'll have mosques everywhere and Sharia law everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's the game plan, is to just
totally
balkanize our society.
Exactly.
And have us, just as Ezekiel 38 explains, surrounded by our enemies in our own lands.
Well, right now it's a process of disenfranchising the white race in its own habitat, in our own countries, okay? And this is ultimately going to lead to fighting in the streets. It's going to lead to blood in the streets. There's no other solution, because they're going to push our backs up against the wall until we start to fight back.
These verses can only describe America, of all the nations in the world. And to a point, it could describe Britain and France and what's happened there with their floods of aliens.
Yes.
But they don't meet all of the criteria here.
Right.
Now, the immigrants, this is really why the immigrants are here, as verse 12 says, to take a spoil and a prey. the immigrants are all here to take a spoil. And they have indeed done just that,
That's right. We
don't even know it.
Yeah.
We work and we pay better than half of our labor back in taxes, most of us, and the immigrants reap the benefits. They're handed jobs, they're handed businesses through all these immigration programs. They're
free
just
schools,
given
free homes,
and all of that comes from the American middle class and the average wage earner.
That's right.
And this, yeah, you know, this, as we'll see in the end, this is all for the purposes of the ultimate glory of our God, and it's a hard lesson that we have to learn. Because our ancient ancestors would not get rid of these bastards in the first place.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, in earlier chapters of Ezekiel, we are told that whichever non-white races we import into our nations, Yahweh will use them to punish us. That's what's
and
happening
that's exactly
right now. Yes. Okay, verse 11. And you shall say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages, which cannot possibly be Israel, because they even built a kosher wall between themselves and the Arabs, right? Isn't that what they did? There's
well,
no way.
Right.
There's no way that the Israeli state can be described as a land of unwalled villages. This is America, folks. I will go to them that are at rest, and we have been at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates. Okay? America.
Well, the only gated communities that I remember back in the New York City area are the rich Jewish communities.
Right.
I don't remember any.
Yeah, to keep the poor people out. Right. And as you mentioned already, to take a spoil and to take a prey, to turn your hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods that dwell in the midst of the land. It's a very concise description of the Israelites coming to America, turning it into a paradise, and now the international Jew has spoiled it all. Spoiled it all, taking us as a prey. Verse 13, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof shall say to you, are you come to take a spoil? Have you gathered your company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold? FDR, right, gave all our gold to the international Jew to take.
Well, yes, he did.
And in the 1950s and 60s, the State Department was giving our cattle and goods, wheat, etc., giving it away to the Bolsheviks in Russia, right? For a song. And the Jewish Freiberg family made a fortune selling, you know, as middlemen, taking overstock American grain and virtually handing it over to the Soviet Union.
Well,
right?
Well, that creates an artificial effect on the market, too, and
of course
deflates the prices of the commodities.
Right.
Because it creates an artificial demand where the demand is too high it perverts the entire commodities market.
Sure, but the middleman makes a huge profit. That's
well,
the
well
point,
of course,
right? Everybody else suffers because it distorts the economy, right?
And that's why they control the mercantile exchanges.
That's right. Verse 14, therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, thus says Yahweh Elohim, in that day when my people of Israel dwell safely, shall you not know it? And, of course, it can't be the Soviet Union. It can't be Russia, because Russia was taken over violently. You know, it was a war. It was a coup in military style. Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, etc. Here in America, we have been dwelling safely, and it has taken the international Jew 100 years since the founding of the Federal Reserve Board to slowly but surely drain the life substance of the American people out of our being and take over our country. It's taken them 100 years to do it. While we dwell safely, okay? It can only be America here. Verse 15, and you shall come from your place out of the north parts, you and many people with you, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. So here we're talking about the final conflict, the final battle.
Well, right, and those north parts here are the parts north relative to Ezekiel, which is where the Ashkenazi Jews and the Turks and all the related peoples came from.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Verse 16, and you shall come up against my people of Israel, which can't be the Jews, right? As a cloud to cover the land, it shall be in the latter days, and I will bring you against my land that the heathen may know me, when I shall be sanctified in you, O Gog, before their eyes. So in other words, what this verse is saying, that we the remnant who understand what this is saying, Yahweh will be sanctified in our eyes because we will see him destroy this invading army.
Well, or the nations may know me, right?
Yes.
The nations instead of the heathen. That may be nations.
Right. It's Goyim right there. And that's just an interpretation by the King James translators here.
Now we don't know, we don't have the details here as to how this happens. We'll be given it a little later. But it's the same description as when I cited Revelation 12, 16, and 29.
Uh-huh.
That these people are definitely going to be destroyed by Yahweh himself, I believe.
Right.
That the this whole chapter has to be the perpetual enmity of the two seeds carried on down through Esau.
No doubt.
Most of these invading people actually carry Kenite and Canaanite genes.
Okay.
All the Arab peoples carry Canaanite genes.
Yes.
Little doubt genetically. And they're cousins of the Jews. It's one huge...
they all practice different religions, but they're basically hybrid populations related to the Jew in one way or another. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and Gog would be the leader, and the Gog is the Ashkenazi Jewish Zionist faction that has all the money. Basically.
Well, that's the beast. Well, we have the beast. We have the Islamic peoples. We have the false prophet. And I believe that's what they represent in the Revelation.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of our own churches are false prophets.
Yeah, exactly.
Also.
Exactly. Catholic Church and the Protestant Church.
They also have been purchased by Judaism.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Just as Islam was contrived by Judaism.
That's right.
And Islam is a Jewish contrivance.
Yes. Yeah. It started out that way. It had a life of its own for quite some time. And then, the international Jew, vis-a-vis the House of Rothschild, manipulated the Islamic religion at various stages in its history against the West. Okay? And they did it in Spain. The Rothschilds we know that, for example, the Saudi royal family are actually crypto-Jews. So there's always been this behind-the-scenes working together between Islam and Judaism against the West.
Well, right, but they've never really, they've never really had success,
right,
against Christendom,
right,
the Jews. When they brought the Mongols eventually receded back into Asia. They destroyed a good part of Europe, and I believe, when we come to the Book of Revelation, we'll see a third part of the men are slain from these plagues. That basically a third of Christendom was lost to the Mongols and to the Turks and their invasions. However, that they could never get to Germany, they could never take France, they could never take Britain, they could never take the Scandinavian nations or even Russia until they were allowed to live amongst us as equal citizens, and that began with the French Revolution.
Right.
When that started, when the secret societies were allowed to function, Masonry was allowed to function, and they usurped the power through those agencies to launch the French Revolution. And when they became equal citizens after the French Revolution, and Napoleon exported that to the rest of Europe. That was the signal of our demise.
That was letting Satan, the chains of Satan, loose. After
right, and once once that happened, then the Jew was able to gain this political power sufficient to legalize invasions of the Western world,
right.
Which is basically what's happened the last 100 or so years here in America.
Well,
our invasion has been made lawful.
Usury had to be made legal before the Jew could exercise this power, because it's by money lending that the Jew has taken control of all nations.
Well, right, and that process began in the 1500s, but he gained political equality with the French Revolution.
Right. It made it acceptable. It made usury acceptable, or nobody complained about it anymore, ever since the French Revolution. Let me go back to verse 13. Sheba and Dedan and all the merchants of Tarshish, who are we talking about here? Because Sheba would be, south of Egypt. And who's Dedan? What the nation?
Well, right. These may well represent all of the Arab and so-called Mediterranean peoples of South Europe who have been coming here in great numbers. And we don't suspect it, but they exist here as Latinos and Cubans and Portuguese and Sicilians.
Right.
They are the descendants of the people of Sheba and Dedan and Tarshish, to a great extent.
Yes. And there's a lot of Jewish blood in them.
Well, right.
Those
nations, Sheba, Dedan, Dedan is in Arabia, right? And Sheba is in the Sabians, right? They are Arabs.
Yeah.
What would they be doing with the merchants of Tarshish? Well, Tarshish is in southern Spain, right?
Uh-huh.
And the merchants of Tarshish are probably those southern Spanish Jews who did very well there until the Gothic Christian kingdom.
Okay. So
now,
the Phoenicians, because this is the latter days we're talking about.
Well, absolutely, but the merchants of Tarshish and Sheba and Dedan represents here to me Arab peoples, because that's who the Sabians and the people of Dedan, which was a city in Idumea, that's who they were. That's who they became.
Yes.
Yeah, they started out in Genesis chapter 10 as white people, of course.
Yes.
They all did. But Arabs came to occupy their lands and mix in with those original white people.
Right.
Arabs and Edomite Jews. And that's who we have here with Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish.
Right.
And these are the Mediterranean Sephardic mixed Arabs, Jews.
Exactly.
Well, it's all a polyglot, right?
Right.
And we know them today for the most part. They came over here with the conquistadors.
Right.
And settled in South America, in Cuba, in Puerto Rico. And that's what we have among us today in great numbers.
It's anything but Christian. All right. And although the Catholic Church sponsored a lot of it, right? But it's not Christian.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So, verse 17, thus says Yahweh Elohim, are you he of whom I have spoken in old time by my servants, the prophets of Israel, which prophesied in those days many years that I would bring you against them? Well, who can he be talking about here?
It has to be Edomite Jew. It can only
right.
be Canaanite Edomite Jew.
Yeah, who was the ancient enemy of Israel? The Edomite Canaanite Jew, exactly.
Now, in relation to this and to the coming verses, I would like to quote from Jeremiah and again from Revelation chapter 14. The verses that follow, that from verse 18, describe the same thing that Isaiah wrote about 150 years earlier than Ezekiel did in Isaiah chapter 27, verses 1 through 4, where he says, quote, in that day, Yahweh with his sore and great strong, Yahweh with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. That's the Edomite Jew among the sea of peoples.
Right.
And in that day, sing ye unto her a vineyard of red wine. I, Yahweh, do keep it. I will water it every moment lest any hurt it, I will keep it night and day. Fury is not in me. Who would set the briars and the thorns? That they are metaphors which often describe the Canaanite people, so
right.
Even as early as the book of Genesis. Who would set the briars and the thorns against me in battle? I would go through them. I would burn them together. So here we have the chaff, the wheat, and the tares. We have the tares here, the briars and the thorns,
right.
And a vineyard of red wine, and we're going to see that in a minute. And this seems to me to be a reference only to the Jews and those Arab races that are descended from Cain,
yes,
that are the Leviathan serpent in the Sea of Peoples. And it's also a reference to the same harvest which is found in Revelation chapter 14. However, the harvest in Revelation 14 is very poorly translated in the King James Version of the Bible.
Okay.
So I'm going to give my version.
Okay.
There's two harvests in Revelation chapter 14. The first one is described at 14:14. The harvest of the parched or the tares. And that's not a title you'll see for it in your mainstream Bible.
Right.
And I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and he sitting upon the cloud like a son of man, having upon his head a gold crown, and in his hand a sharp scythe. And another messenger came out from the temple, crying out with a great voice to him sitting upon the cloud, swing your scythe and reap, because the hour has come. Now, my translation is very much like the King James to this point.
Okay.
Okay? But the next clause is quite different. My translation has, because parched is the harvest of the earth. Now, the King James has, because ripe is the harvest of the earth. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, when we read about the harvest a verse later at Revelations 14:17, okay, that's the harvest of the ripe. And the Greek word there means ripe. And another messenger came out from the temple which is in heaven, he also having a sharp scythe. And another messenger came out from the altar, and it goes on to say that to harvest the earth, because ripe are her grapes,
uh-huh,
and the clusters of the vine, right? That's the harvest of the ripe. But there's a harvest of the parched first.
Okay.
And the harvest of the parched, that the King James translation took a word, it means a parched vine, and they took this Greek word and they translated it as a ripe vine, as a ripe harvest, and that's it was very it's just dishonest,
right,
the way they translated the word.
Okay.
It's blatantly dishonest.
Uh-huh.
And I have no idea. Sayer follows them in his definition, he follows the King James Version.
Really?
But the prefix zeirus means parched or dry.
Uh-huh.
It can't possibly mean ripe.
Yes.
And that harvest of the parched, I believe, corresponds with just about perfectly with what we're going to read in Ezekiel and what we saw in Isaiah about Leviathan and the briars and the thorns.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, because briars and thorns bear no fruit.
Right.
And neither do parched vines, right?
Right, right. So this parched harvest, do you think this is talking about the fires of World Wars I and II? What do you think that's referring to specifically?
Well, it's the bundling of the tares, I believe.
Okay, so it's just so you still think that, well, although...
That the tares are going to be destroyed first,
right?
Before the people of Yahweh can be gathered by.
Right. We will be judgment begins at the house of Israel, but the Edomites, the tares, will be destroyed first. They will be gathered together, bundled, and burnt. Okay. Our judgment is happening right now because
it's been happening. It's been happening for all through time. The 30 years war was a huge judgment against our people.
Yeah.
But all the wars of the Middle Ages were judgments against our people.
Right.
And it's ongoing. And in World War I, our people suffered more than any others. That the Anglo-Saxons,
right,
and the Germans suffered more than any others. And the,
right,
same thing with World War II.
Absolutely. Our judgment has begun in our house. However, the gathering of the tares is yet to happen. And that will happen, folks. It is going to happen, verse 18. And it shall come to pass at the same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, which is America, and by extension, all Anglo-Saxon Caucasian nations, says Yahweh Elohim, that my fury shall come up in my face. And, of course, the international Jew is attacking all of the Caucasian Christian nations at this point in time. It's just a question of when are our nations going to realize it. Verse 19, for in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken, gathering the tares and bundle and burn, right? Surely,
well, right.
In that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. The shaking is starting right now. You know, I think the shaking is the, you know, the attacks, the physical attacks that are going to shortly start to transpire here in America.
And, right, but it's going to be, it has to be something even greater than we've experienced
far. It's going to be.
But when we read verse 20, it's that's very apparent.
Scattering, yes, so that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. Okay? This is the world as we know it. The earth as we know it is going to be shaken, folks, no doubt about it. Verse 21, and I will call for a sword against him through all my mountains, says Yahweh, every man's sword shall be against his brother.
Now, this seems to me to indicate a state of anarchy and civil war.
Okay.
But this is also exactly how it's been for us since the time of Napoleon.
Right, right.
Since the time of Napoleon, our race has fought against itself and again.
Yes.
Almost every one of our wars have been against other white nations.
Right, always instigated by the international Jew, however. And our people simply can't see that.
Of course. But the Napoleonic Wars, the wars between Russia and Prussia and Germany and England and Germany and the North and the South, it's every man's sword against his brother.
But the chaos is going to get worse. It's because right now what we're seeing in every Caucasian country, you have left versus right. And I think even within every country, you're going to see left-wing Caucasians fighting against right-wing Caucasians, right? And the Jews supplying the weapons.
Well, it could very well play out that way yet, but I don't see how it could get worse than it's been.
It's going to be blood in the streets, literally, just like the French Revolution, but on a worldwide scale. I think that's what we're looking at here. Verse 22. And I will plead against him with pestilence and with blood, and I will rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing rain and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. So these verses 21 through 22.
Well, here we have the shaking of the earth, right?
Yes.
And in Revelation 12:16, we have, and the earth assisted the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and gulped down the river which the dragon had cast out from his mouth.
Uh-huh.
And now that's followed by fire and brimstone and hailstone. And in Revelation 29, speaking of Gog and Magog,
right.
and they went up on the breast of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. So that's a direct correlation to what we have here in this paragraph.
Right. And so if Gog and Magog and the armies, you know, of Gog and Magog are destroyed by all of this fire and brimstone, who's going to be left after 1,000 years to come back and deceive the nations if the postmillennialists are correct?
Well, right. The postmillennialists are just wrong.
Yeah.
And I could understand their confusion because Revelation chapter 20, verse 5, talks about a resurrection of the dead.
Uh-huh.
However, if they would only study the manuscript history, they would see that entire sentence was added in the 9th or 10th centuries.
Okay. So there is no...
It comes out of a commentary. Versions, the King James Bible was created from the I'm talking about the book of Revelation, right? was created from manuscripts. The Revelation translation was created from manuscripts that were passed down through 7 or 8 centuries that came from one Andreas of Caesarea.
Okay.
Okay, and Andreas of Caesarea wrote a commentary on the Revelation and had many notes mixed in with his Revelation manuscript.
Okay.
And
okay.
That is one of them.
Yeah.
Now the majority text manuscripts, which are all the Greek manuscripts held by the Roman Church, right?
Uh-huh.
For the most part, and that they're considered copied by scribes, and they're considered the majority text. Now, not the Textus Receptus, there's a difference. Now, the majority text manuscripts are split. Many of them, in fact, the preponderance of them do not have the added text of Andreas of Caesarea.
Oh, okay.
However, the King James manuscript that was used does have that line in the manuscript.
So
and that is where all the confusion comes from.
Right.
And if I could face Keith and debate that with him,
right.
I will destroy him,
yeah.
And he probably still won't get it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because the King James has been translated from various sources, and some of those sources are erroneous. Right.
Well, right.
That doesn't make
sense. And that'll be a part of that elucidation. I've already done a program just on Revelation chapter 20 with that verse and the confusion over it as the centerpiece. And that was last year with Clifton on your Voice of Christian Israel program.
Right, right. Now, it also begs the question that if the saints are going to rule with Christ for 1,000 years, how in the world is the Antichrist going to establish another deceptive?
well, right, because there won't be any Gog and Magog.
It's crazy.
There is no Gog and Magog to come back after 1,000 years.
That's right.
Ezekiel 38 is talking about what's going on in the world now and what has been going on in the world for the past several centuries.
Yes.
And Gog and Magog started their ascent out of the pit when usury was legalized in Europe at the very beginning of the 16th century under the De Medici popes.
Right.
And they gained total freedom from that pit with the French Revolution when the Ashkenazi Jew became equal citizens with Christians in France and everywhere else Napoleon went.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, the Jews got their emancipation. They broke the yoke of Jacob,
right?
Basically, and now they've come to rule over him, and that's a matter of prophecy. Now this has been going on. It's been a 500-year process. However, when they are destroyed, that's the end of Gog and Magog,
right?
At the second coming of Christ, and there's no room. For, as you said, for another resurrection of Gog and Magog 1,000 years after that, that's absolutely absurd to hold to that in the light of the historical interpretation of prophecy.
Yeah, if Jesus is ruling, how in the world is the Antichrist going to gain any kind of foothold while Jesus is ruling? You know, so it's,
right.
It's just an absurd, you know, they haven't thought that process through. Yeah. Okay.
No, because they're running on emotion for the most part.
Well, yeah, and this millennial reign of Christ, okay, has become a fixture of Judeo-Christian prophecy, and it was wrong when it started, and it gets wronger all the time. Okay, all right, Ezekiel chapter 39. Therefore, you son of man, prophesy against Gog, and say thus, says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against you, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and I will turn you back and leave but the sixth part of you, and will cause you to come up from the north parts, and will bring you upon the mountains of Israel. So this can only mean a literal army attack, invasion of the United States of America, and of course the other Israelite nations around the world.
Right, right. I have a couple of comments. First, I have one more comment about the end of 38. The end of 38, if you read the end of 38, verse 23, this indicates the destruction of our enemies by forces other than ourselves.
Right.
And I have a rhetorical question here. If we did it ourselves, if we effected our own liberation from the beast, could we, by any means, acknowledge the hand of Yahweh in our salvation? And history gives us a resounding no.
Uh-huh.
So I believe that Yahweh himself must be our Savior.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, Ezekiel 39:1, therefore, thou son of man, prophecy against God. This isn't a revival of the God that was just destroyed.
Right,
in verse
God. Yeah, he hasn't invaded yet.
Well, right. We don't have 1,000 years in between Ezekiel 38:23 and Ezekiel 39:1,
right?
This is not an additional prophecy. Rather, that this is an additional explanation of the same things which we have just read.
Yes, right. It's more details. It's leaving but a sixth part of you, so that whatever military force, and I'm including China, and possibly Russia. I'm not so sure that Russia is really anti-American. However, the Zionists still control.
Well, the Russian people are not anti-American.
That's right.
But, right, anybody that thinks that Putin isn't a Zionist pawn is severely undereducated or hasn't thought it through.
Right.
Putin is, when Putin came to power, the same 10 or 12 Jews that obtained all of Russia's industry and commercial assets.
The oligarchs.
In the Yeltsin period, they still held it.
Uh-huh.
Putin put on a little show with one of them and tormented one of them who was a media magnate. I forget his name. But that was for personal reasons. And I think it was a sideshow to show us, Putin's this guy that means business. He's left the others totally alone.
Right.
He hasn't. They're all unscathed, and they're still running Russia.
Right. Yeah. One or two may have fled to Israel, but
right.
Really
but
has
for most
purge.
Part, no, there's no purge.
Yeah.
There's no. If Putin really meant to justify past wrongs and stand up for the Russian people themselves, he'd have stripped every one of those oligarchs of every one of their unlawfully obtained assets.
That's right.
Because they bought up the wealth of Russia for a song when the Bolshevik regime fell apart.
Exactly. Yeah. I like to put it this way. The Bolshevik managers of the factories instantly became the owners of the factories when communism fell, right? And so in either case, it's still Jews running the show.
Right, and that shows you that who orchestrated the fall of communism.
That's right.
And the Jews didn't orchestrate the fall of communism because communism didn't work, as these idiot sheep in America are led to believe.
Right.
They didn't need that wall anymore because we became communists.
Right.
We are as communist as the Soviets were in the 1970s.
Right.
They just didn't need that wall anymore.
Right. And the larger strategy of taking the whole world, via the United Nations organization and the international banking establishment. Yeah, they just didn't need it anymore.
Well, we lost the culture war in the 50s and 60s. We rolled over and let the Jews have our country.
That's right. Yes.
And most of us don't even know it. We don't even know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we're still watching too many soap operas and football games on television to pay attention to politics, right?
Well, the proof that we have a country, a Judaized country, if people would read, they're never going to read it, right? Brian and I did a program, Germany and the Jewish Problem, and what the Germans were suffering in the Weimar Republic, the pornography everywhere, the pulp novels,
right.
All the garbage that their entire beautiful Christian society had become littered with in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And after World War II, and 15 years after World War II, the same process culminates here.
Yes, exactly.
And today we have pornography everywhere. Our airwaves are filled with smut. The Internet's filled with smut. We have instant divorces. We have destroyed families. Everybody's on drugs.
Yeah.
Satan running the world.
Well,
it's simple.
Yeah, the Weimar Republic is a capsule summary in about 10 10-year period of time of what has been happening to America for the last 100 years. Okay? It's just happened there very quickly because Germany was a very small country compared to America, and it was still reeling from the after effects of World War One. Okay? There's no way that Germany could extend its prosperity the way America has. Okay? It didn't have a world economy like America has. Okay? But nevertheless, your point is absolutely right. The Weimar Republic is kind of like a presage of what's happening to America and the entire planet right now. And guess who's responsible in both cases?
Well, right. It's the Jew. Wherever the Jew goes, all you see is perversion and destruction.
Right, right. Yeah, so the Roaring Twenties. We had the Roaring Twenties here, but they didn't, destroy.
Well, right. They couldn't. The Roaring Twenties. Well, first, I think in a lot of ways the Roaring Twenties were overplayed because it was, for the most part, concentrated in the cities and didn't really pollute most of rural Christian America. And it was a media event as much as it was anything else. The Jews were trying to set an example of the beauties of decadence for the rest of the country.
Right.
But the
country was
now today that pollution has totally rural Christian America has succumbed to it. Absolutely, 100%. That the pornography and the drugs and all of the race mixing, it's all over rural America as well as the city.
That's right. Yeah, it's nationwide now. Yes. Yes. Okay, so let me get back to verse 1. Let me read verses 1 through 3, chapter 39. Therefore, you son of man, prophesy against Gog, and say thus, says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against you, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal today is, in fact, the house of Rothschild, the international Jew. And I will turn you back and leave but the sixth part of you and will cause you to come up from the north parts and will bring you upon the mountains of Israel. And I will smite your bow out of your left hand and will cause your arrows to fall out of your right hand. So when they decide to attack America militarily, you know, organizing the armies of, let's say, China, Russia, Korea, and even in South America, what country? Guevara. I got the right name.
Venezuela.
Venezuela. Yes, and other nations that are openly hostile to America. Right. This is the coalition that the international Jew is forming against the West.
Well, right. But I also think that Ezekiel 39 more or less is another follow-up theme of the same overview that we were given in Ezekiel 38. I don't think that we're to read one prophecy and imagine that it picks some point in time right after the other finishes. You see what I mean?
Okay.
It's expounding on what we're told in Ezekiel 38. Because we have the enemy destroyed at the end of 38, and now it's going into another facet of the same prophecy.
Right.
Was a new vision.
Yes.
And that's the therefore thou son of man prophecy against Gog. It's a separate prophecy of the same thing. And this, I believe, describes our relationship with the other races today.
Uh-huh.
There's no more Golden Horde. There's no more Tamerlane. There's no more Santa Ana. There's no more Geronimo. We defeated all the other races militarily. They were all repulsed. They could never overcome us
militarily with
a front-on confrontation, an open confrontation. However, now they immigrate legally and they walk amongst us freely. While we see them as immigrants, they still see themselves as conquerors.
That's right.
And we volunteered to be their plunder.
And they are. And we are.
So Yahweh turned the ball back, but he left that sixth part of them.
Uh-huh.
And that's the part that we're saturated with now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So verse 4, you shall fall upon the mountains of Israel, you and all your bands and the people that is with you. And, of course, if Gog is the international Jew, the Ashkenazi Jew, and all the people that he has assembled against Caucasian Israel, I will give you to the ravenous birds of every sort and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Praise Yahweh for that day. I want to see that day.
Well, that day is the wedding supper of the Lamb.
Right.
Revelation 19, verses 19 to 21, and I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered to make war with him sitting upon the horse and with his army, meaning Christ, and he seized the beast and with him the false prophet who had been making signs before him by which he deceived those having received the inscribed mark of the beast and who worshipped his image.
Well,
these two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with sulfur, and those remaining were slain by the sword of him sitting upon the horse which came out from his
right.
mouth. And all the birds ate their fill from their flesh.
Well, the false prophet can only be the all of organized religion that teaches that race mixing is the solution to all of our problems, right? It's the false prophet, folks. All your major denominations are teaching this today. They are going to be destroyed, too, okay? You shall fall upon the open field, for I have spoken it, says Yahweh. So the ultimate destruction of the false prophet, which is the bastard churches who are teaching that we white people must miscegenate ourselves out of existence, and of course the beast being the the Gog and Magog beast of the international bankers, who their presence is so obvious everywhere, yet it's downplayed by the media, and the churches don't mention it at all. Okay, so the churches are simply the excuse makers, the front men for the beast. Okay?
Well, they've been purchased by the beast.
That's right.
And today, every one of them that draws a salary, it is he's working for the beast.
And I will send a fire on Magog, and among them that dwell carelessly or safely, really, without care.
Well, without care.
Yeah. In the isles. And they shall know that I am Yahweh.
And that's Revelation 29, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them.
Yes. Verse 7, So will I make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let them pollute my holy name anymore, and the heathen shall know that I am Yahweh.
Well, that should probably be interpreted, and the nation shall know that
right.
I am Yahweh.
Who's making his holy name known? It's only Christian Identity that is making his holy name known in the midst of my people Israel. So we are the fulfillment of this prophecy, folks. We are making his holy name known. He is making his name known through us. Verse 8, behold, it is come, and it is done, says Yahweh. This is the day whereof I have spoken. D-Day. The great day of his wrath, and they that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall set on fire and burn the weapons, both the shields and the bucklers and the bows and the arrows and the hand staves and the spears, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. So it's going to take us 7 years to destroy all the implements of war that the army of Gog and Magog have assembled against Caucasian Israel. Verse 10, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any of the forest, for they shall burn the weapons with fire, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them. That's only justice, folks. The Edomites have been robbing us and spoiling us for the last 2,000 years. It's payback time. The great day of Yahweh is payback. Verse 11. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give to Gog a place there of graves in Israel. That's wherever our people are. The valley of the passengers on the east of the sea. And it shall stop the noses of the passengers. And they shall there bury Gog and all his multitude. And they shall call it the valley of Hamon Gog.
Now, I have a lot of notes on this passage, and we're going to have to wait until the next time we convene
right.
this program.
Yes.
Because it's already like 9:23.
Right.
But Clifton had put together a presentation from this, and I think it's really important to get together to get across a couple of paragraphs from.
Right. Right. Okay. So, yeah, so why don't we pick it up? Well, actually, you know, I'm going to be gone next if Greg can be your straight man and read these passages and you can do the commentary. I'm sure he'd be more than willing to do that. And so, why don't you guys pick it up at Ezekiel 39:11 next Friday night?
Well, that would be fine.
Okay, very good. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So these chapters dealing with Gog and Magog are clearly end time prophecies. As Bill has been saying, these are generational. This is a generational, multi-generational process that has been taking thousands of years to build up. But there will be a final resolution. There's a crescendo of events happening, and it's leading to this judgment day. And it looks like, folks, the time is near because the world economy is collapsing, and the international financiers of the House of Rothschild have to do something, and the only thing they can really do is more war. I think we're going to see this battle of Gog and Magog against the West coming very soon. Of course, World War One and World War Two and Vietnam, et cetera, have been part of the process, but we're still anticipating World War Three, the final resolution that puts an end to all war. And it's of course, they've been trying to tell us, as Woodrow Wilson said, the war to end all wars. No. That was just another phase of the war of the Edomites against true Israel. But that warfare will eventually come to an end. Yahweh himself in these chapters has told us he will end it himself. Praise
God. Well, every one of their wartime slogans has always proved out to be lies.
That's right. It's always proved to be wrong. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Thank you, Bill. And, so, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night we'll be continuing our series on the Epistles of John. Looking forward to that on Yahweh's
Kingdom. I thought we were doing James tomorrow night.
Oh, did we start? Did we finish with the Epistles?
We didn't start, John, but I thought we discussed last week that we were
going
to go to James.
Sorry. We'll do James then. Okay, very good. All right. Thank you all for listening. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you.
Yahweh bless and good night.